broadcast studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosky Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, Roofing, and Restoration. For service, call 444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. And another one of our big sponsors, John Moore Associates, always telling us how to take care of our money. Hi, Brian Cochran. How are you?
Yeah, good to be here. I'm doing really good. I wish we could do this outside today, though. It's pretty darn nice out there.
There is no place anywhere in this country where the fall is as nice as it is in Albuquerque.
It's unbelievable out there right now.
We've been enjoying church services out in the amphitheater at Calvary Church. And, I mean, there's no wind. For the last 3 or 4 weeks, it's just been spectacular.
Yeah.
And it's just an enjoyable thing. A lot of people that are still a little nervous about going into the services can socially distance and everything outside. Skip comes across loud and clear on the big screen out in the plaza right above the baptismal. Nice. And it's really nice. You know, the other thing, too, I've really appreciated about the Calvary campus, and I know this is true with some other campuses, is this has really been designed for people to enjoy throughout the week. You know, the beautiful disc park and a lot of benches to sit on. You can sit out here and have lunch in the amphitheater area. A lot of people having meetings. The coffee shop outdoors is really nice. So enjoy it, because I understand we're going to have some dropping temperatures pretty quick.
Yeah, but we'll take it while we got it. That's for sure. We'll enjoy it.
Brian, we've got a big election coming up, and you've been trying to calm our fears and dissuade us from moving everything out of the stock market and restructuring all of our investments. And I think you've been pretty successful. I know you've been successful with me on that. But I want to ask you, I want to go right to the johnmoore.com website. I want to ask you about this quote on your website. Money has its value, but there is no amount that can provide for what really matters.
Yeah, and that's a testament, I mean, from our experience plus biblical truth, that when you look at what really matters to people, the health of their family, their faith, their relationship with God, all these things that we hold so important, money can't really provide for those things or fix things in those areas when it's broken. And so what we strive to do in our practice is help people make wise financial decisions, but never lead them to think that any advice we can give that helps increase their net worth can also fix those other problems or, bring total happiness. They really need to seek that contentment on their own with our guidance, hopefully. But in the end, that's their job along with the Holy Spirit to bring them that kind of contentment, joy, peace. And you can go through hard times. We've all known people who've done that, who've gone through ups and downs, and somehow they have that sense of peace and contentment. And that might be someone who doesn't have a lot of money and material things, but they've got something else right. And that's the truth that we want to make sure our clients understand.
My producer is pointing at himself. Do you resemble that statement, Steve? Hey, I appreciate you sharing that, Brian. Brian, this election is really stressful. Obviously, there's a prior president, Barack Obama. And you explained something to me that I had never thought about before, the contrast between monetary policy and what was the other term you
fiscal
used?
Policy.
Well, fiscal policy. Yeah.
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 And so what we were talking about there, and what I think a lot of people need to understand as you go into another election, and today we'll talk a lot about taxes in particular, is that, the government can incentivize growth, and there's ways that between the federal government and the Federal Reserve, which are two very different entities, they can stimulate additional economic growth. And what you saw during the Obama administration, I think, was much more growth inspired by monetary policy. And that is the Federal Reserve changing interest rates. And actually during his administration, because of the dire nature of the financial crisis, there was really extreme and new actions taken in the monetary policy side to keep interest rates low. And you'll appreciate this in your mortgage background. They were buying mortgage-backed securities and other bonds to make interest rates go down. And that really benefited his administration. He gets credited a lot with economic growth. Whereas once Donald Trump took over in 2016, the Federal Reserve had already started to pivot away from having such easy and generous monetary policy. And so I think that's why you saw so much tax reform in the Trump administration, is they decided that to keep the growth going and to keep the economy expanding, which was a big priority for them as a pro-business administration. They focus more on the fiscal policy. Now, fiscal policy is government spending, taxation, things like that, where government revenues are controlled in a way that should hopefully stimulate more activity or could potentially suppress activity depending on what type of tax and spending policy you put in.
I know today, Brian, you want to talk to us about taxes. You want to talk about the taxes that are currently in place, how those might change if another president is elected. But I also know that you want to reserve political commentary. So tell us a little bit, disclaim for us, because I want our listeners to understand you're really trying to educate us. You're really trying to help us understand the way things work. You're not trying to talk anybody into, you know, vote in a certain way. But the truth is that the facts are going to be clear, mm-hmm. I think, after you talk to us about this today. But as always, when you're on the radio and you're expressing an opinion, you're opening yourself to some criticism. So tell us where we're at before we start talking about taxes.
Yeah, so just a couple sort of disclaimers. First thing, I'm a certified financial planner, but I'm not a CPA, a public accountant. So don't take anything we say today as tax advice that you should go act upon without first consulting with a tax professional. And then certainly anytime you get into tax, you're going to talk about politics. And we're going to get a little bit of opinion bled in here. I'm going to really try to stick to facts and things that have been proposed and things that we know have taken place. But those opinions, of course, are my own. They're not K&KT's opinions or John Moore Associates, my firm. And you'll have your own political opinions, but I'll try to keep some facts out there that might inform you, you know, no matter what side of the aisle you're on. And the third thing I want to make sure people understand is if you're a believer, you should view the tax conversation differently, just like so many other things in life, right? A believer really should think and act differently in the area of taxation. And what we try to understand as believers is, first off, paying your taxes is biblical. It was addressed in the Bible. One of the best verses for that is Matthew 22, verse 21, you know, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. That's a pretty popular verse. But also thinking about taxes as a symptom of God's provision. So think about that for a minute. If you're paying taxes, that means you have income. Last year, 47% of all tax filers had no income tax liability. Okay. Most of those people are seniors, low-income families, you know, folks who wish they had more. So if you're paying taxes and you're complaining about it, you know, do the best you can to work within the law to reduce your tax liability. But taxes are almost always going to be symptomatic of God's generous provision to us.
I also want to qualify. You've educated us in regular contributing. You've been contributing weekly with 10-minute market updates, and then this is a time today where you'll be with us the entire hour and talking about some things in detail. And you and I discussed this being important because of the upcoming election. But I also want, even though you've clearly defined that you're not a CPA, you consult with CPAs. They are in some ways kind of a contractor to your team. You have people come in that have expertise that talk to your team at John Moore Associates so that you can understand how to advise your investors correctly.
Exactly. We go to CPA education courses to get the same education that tax advisors might receive. And we coordinate closely when we serve the families that we work with. We coordinate as much as we possibly can with their CPAs to make sure they're informed of the change we're suggesting and the changes that we've made, as well as get educated from them. What are you thinking about for the benefit of this client? So from that, we pick up a lot of information on the tax side. And then honestly, just in our general reading of financial planning concepts, we're going to pick up a lot of tax. So it's not that we are not capable of advising clients on taxes, but it's really important when you talk about taxes. It's a very personal family to family, one tax return to the other. You have to make sure you're working on your taxes with your own personal tax advisor before you make any decisions.
Brian, let's start right off the bat. Obviously, there's platforms. It's not real hard to figure out the incumbent's platform because you see what has been going on in the Trump administration for the last 3 or 4 years, and that has had some real positive results. You've talked about that being changes in fiscal policy.
Yep.
Tell us what you see in Biden's proposals that may change things.
It's a pretty big 180, like so many different areas where the current administration and the Biden administration are different or would be different. you know, there's a big contrast there. And so, for example, one of the ways that the Trump administration used fiscal policy to drive growth was to lower the taxation on companies, so corporations, so thinking larger companies, as well as LLCs and S-corps, what we call pass-through entities. They both had different forms of tax incentive that lowered the liabilities to those businesses. Also, you had lower taxes for the highest tax brackets. Really, every tax bracket was moved down slightly in the percentage of tax that you would pay. But some of the greatest difference was on the higher incomes. And we've seen our clients benefit from that. And also, another big piece of the legislation that was passed is that the Trump tax reform, it was all passed in late 2017 and really started in 2018. Was a limit on the state and local tax deduction, where if you pay state and local taxes, like your property taxes, as well as your state income, they limited the tax deduction on that to $10,000, which for most New Mexicans, not a big deal. But if you live in California and you're making $1 million a year and paying a 13% income tax, so your taxes might be six figures and you can only deduct 10,000 of that, you saw a huge swing in the tax liability for people on those coastal states that have the highest tax liabilities. All of that that I just mentioned, lower taxes for businesses, lower taxes for high income, lower taxes or higher taxes for those coastal states, all of that's reversed. Should Biden get his way, you would have more state and local tax deductions for those high income earners on the coastal states, which makes sense. That's a big part of his, you know, his supporters. But also returning to higher taxes, and not only returning the taxes we had pre-2018, but going much higher than that for some high-income people and raising the taxes on businesses.
Brian, when you look at the things that the Democrat Party wants to accomplish, the various programs and things, that's going to take funding. It seems to me, looking at this, that they want to distribute the majority of that tax burden onto people that make larger incomes. Sounds logical, but can that actually work?
It can. You can pull more income from the higher income earners. I mean, we're at pretty historic low taxes right now. So in U.S. history, even the last 20 years, we've seen higher tax liabilities creating higher revenues. The challenge is, if you look at all they want to do, these tax increases don't even get close to paying for all the expenses, you know. And, you know, you're campaigning right now as a presidential candidate. You're going to put out a lot of big ideas, but there's no way that they can tax that wealthy upper. Usually they often talk about the upper 10% or the upper 1%. You could tax them 100% and you can't pay for everything that's proposed. Now, I think it's important to note that Trump tax cuts also created deficits. They were hoping that increased economic growth would help cover those deficits, but it's estimated that, well, COVID threw a curveball on everything, of course, but the Trump tax cuts were creating deficits in the order of about $1 to $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years. So even those tax cuts were not really paid for. So, and we have a long history now in our country of not paying for the government programs that we enjoy.
It's always easier to spend someone else's money, isn't it?
It is, or money from the future.
That's right. We are spending the afternoon today with Brian Cochran. He's a certified financial planner with John Moore Associates. Stay with us. We're talking about taxes and how those may change with the upcoming election, how things could possibly be affected, and trying to do the best we can to be as objective as possible. So stay with us. More with Brian Cochran right after these messages.
Serving you and your family.
Locally grown, locally owned. Bosca Heating and Cooling. A portion goes back into the community. 444-7200.
For quality service like a breath of fresh air, call Bosca and we'll be there.
Gonstead Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury, pain in your back, neck, shoulders, arms and legs, as well as numbness in your extremities. Dizziness and bladder or bowel issues can all be symptoms. 90% of doctors treating spinal ligament injuries don't know how to determine the severity and location of this condition. At Gonstead Physical Medicine, all of the providers are trained to do this. Schedule a consultation today at gonstead-nm.com or 505-884-8584.
The Great Mission features ministries making disciples for Christ. Many of these ministries are halfway around the world. Amigo Fiel is just down the road, south on I-25 in Juarez, Mexico. For more than 25 years, Carlos and Sylvia Garcia have provided a safe place for children to find food and assistance with homework after school. Amid COVID-19, Amigo Fiel continues. Here's Carlos.
Greeting from Amigo Fiel in Ciudad Juarez. We welcome the children. We're taking the necessary precautions to keep everything clean so that we prevent disease from being spread. We are experiencing a shortage of food, as his word says in Philippians 4:6. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God.
Support Amigo Fiel. Click the Great Mission banner at star88.fm or knkt.com.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Not sure anyone that's listening today wants to talk about taxes, but we're hoping that you get something positive out of this in terms of preparing for the upcoming election and, you know, examining. Now, we're talking about things mainly from a federal level, the federal economy, the national economy. But, of course, all of this does affect the states as well. So, as people, you made a statement early, Brian, in our first segment that people that are believers, people that have Jesus as Lord and Savior, ought to actually look at taxes a little differently.
Yeah, they should pay them because they've been told to, not just by the IRS, but also by Jesus himself, made clear statements about that. And they should do it with a feeling of gratitude that they've been blessed with the resources that, you know, create a tax burden. Again, 47% of all American households not paying any income tax. I mean, that's a lot of people who simply aren't generating enough income to pay that liability.
We had a $2.3 trillion COVID-19 CARES Act relief bill that was passed, I think back in June. A lot of us received checks in the mail for about $1,200. You were kind enough to come on the show and say, gee, I'm really hoping that you don't stick that in the bank, that you actually use it to stimulate the economy and buy goods and services with that. I appreciated that advice. I think people should save. That's how you make a living, is getting people to save money and do investments and those kind of things. And there's a biblical precedent to do that as well. Brian, where does this money come from? Do we have an unlimited money supply?
Not necessarily. As long as someone's willing to loan us the money, we can continue to spend. It's not that much different for the government as it is for you and I. So the way the government obtains that money, if there's not enough dollars coming in from tax revenues, is they issue debt. They issue debt in the form of bonds. So a lot of people don't understand the difference between stocks and bonds. When you own a stock, you own a piece of a company. You're an owner. When you buy a bond, you're loaning money to somebody. You're a loaner. So there's owners and loaners, stocks and bonds. And the federal government is still considered worldwide to be the best people to loan money to, you know, the best entity. We have great taxing power. We have a, you know, net worth amongst our country as individual citizens of somewhere over $90 to $100 trillion. So there's a lot of capital there that can be accessed if they need to pay their debts. So when the government needs to spend $2 trillion they don't have, they go out and they raise that money through T-bonds or treasury bonds and T-bills and other instruments that they can use. And those right now, you know, if you loan the government, you know, for 10 years, you're going to get about 0.75%, a little bit less than that for the next 10 years. So the government's fortunate in the sense that right now they're not having to pay much on those dollars that they've been loaned, that outstanding debt. So we've seen the debt jump significantly, and that's been a debate now, is how much more debt are we willing to take to push through this difficult economic period? And of course, that's been well publicized between Congress and the president of what kind of a bill can we do as a second round of relief based on how much debt we're willing to take and how that would be issued.
Maybe not a fair question, but I have two things that are not on our list of questions. One, it's not just individuals buying those treasuries. Other countries are buying those.
Other countries, insurance companies also buy them, pension funds, state-funded, you know, pensions buy treasuries. There's a lot of entities that rely on that high quality debt where they're very confident that they're going to be paid back. Where those interest rates can go up is if either people feel like there's going to be more inflation in the future and they're not willing to accept only 0.75% because they want their money to stay you know, valuable, and they are worried that inflation is going to be an issue. So that can drive interest rates higher as those lenders demand more interest. Also, if people become concerned that the person receiving the loan is not likely to pay them back or is less likely to pay them back, they want to be compensated for that risk of not getting their money back, what's called a default. If that's a risk, whether it's a corporation or a government like the U.S. government, then those interest rates rise. So we, to your question, is that unlimited? It feels that way right now because the interest rates are low. It's easy to service that debt, but someone's going to have to pay that back eventually. And if the people who are lending us that money eventually become concerned about our ability to pay that debt, those interest rates go up. It becomes less, you know, manageable to operate that debt. And then we start to get into trouble about how do we fund future operations if the interest rates are higher.
I don't want this to be an unfair question, but in my time, I've been in New Mexico almost my entire life, watched the operations of multiple governors, and the person that I think did the most amazing job from a fiscal standpoint was Governor Gary Johnson. You know, here's a man that started a handyman business, built a multi-million dollar construction company, sold that, became the governor of New Mexico, took a state that was in the red, the governor preceding him, and I won't mention any names, but everybody kind of knows who that was, loved to spend money. Well, Gary Johnson ran us in the black for 8 years. He took the smallest, poorest state in the country and ran it profitably, if I can use that word, or at least without borrowing a lot of money. And, you know, I don't know the details, but it seems like, and I can't, you know, during this time of COVID, we've obviously lost a lot of gross receipts revenue. We've lost oil and gas revenues. The oil and gas industry has just totally fallen out. That's through no fault of any politician. Maybe at the international level, because I know that Russia and OPEC are basically trying to put the United States out of the oil production business, and they have the capability of manipulating prices in the market so that oil and gas that's produced in the United States can't not be produced as efficiently or as economically as it can be, you know, say in Egypt. So, you know, I know that there's extenuating circumstances that no politician can cover, but I still get worried about things going on in New Mexico, like negative population growth. We really aren't adding a lot of jobs, although there's bright spots that I hear about. Just interviewed the son of the former governor, Jerry Apodaca. Jeff Apodaca was on the program, and he started a farming business, farming hemp, and had an interesting discussion with him. His show will air next Tuesday, and he was talking about they've already hired hundreds of people. They're consulting with other farmers, and the reason they're doing this is because they can produce CBD products and things that are totally legal, but there's fibers and all kinds of things that are used in construction. I mean, it's like this whole industry is now coming to New Mexico, and it's a fascinating discussion with them. I want to hear about, you know, I think Spaceport America is really starting to take off down south. They're bringing in new contracts, and that sounds really exciting. I can't help but think that has a lot to do with New Mexico Tech University and the credibility they've earned internationally for the people coming out of that school. Those are the kinds of standards that I think we need to have. I think they even have a commercial now where if you graduate from New Mexico Tech, you're going to be among the top 10% income earners in the country. Wow, we need UNM and New Mexico State and Highlands and all the rest of them to be at that level.
And it takes leadership to drive a state or a country forward in a responsible way. And a lot of times people act like these things are impossible. You know, for example, in 2016, after that election, a lot of people felt, economists we talked to, politicians, they all felt like the country was peaked out economically. There was no more room for continued job gains. There was no more room for new manufacturing development, that we were probably about to peak out and a recession was likely imminent. And here we are, you know, pre-COVID, what you saw was we did have additional job gains. We went from about 4.5% unemployment down to 3.5%. We had the lowest unemployment in history for African American and Hispanic folks in this country. And I mean, it's incredible how much the economy did continue to grow, and I think part of that is the fiscal policy we saw that incentivized growth. And people, I really struggle because people, I think, twist the facts on this a lot. And we talked about this recently, you know, the 2019 economic data that we saw for households, something was going right in the economy because, you know, the bottom 20% of income earners had a 9% increase in their income.
Yes.
You know, massive increases over the last few years for low to moderate income families, that kind of middle class and lower middle class, the working poor in some cases started to see some big advancement. We saw the highest credit scores we've seen in years. We saw the highest or still very low debt on balance sheets. So people were able to advance their families and buy lots of goods and services without taking on a huge debt load. I mean, the economy was really what we would call a Goldilocks economy. It was not too hot where we have high inflation and problems there, but also wasn't cold at all. It was just right. And coming into 2020, a lot of things were working well, and that people have tried to change or retell that story. But it's really hard to argue if you actually look at the numbers as we do every week.
So, Brian, again, this is not scripted, but I'm going to ask you, if Donald Trump were to win and the fiscal policies were to remain in place, you're probably going to be expecting some more stimulus money of some kind. We can't really project that. That's going to be between both parties to decide. But you think the fiscal policies will continue that we have now? And will it be possible for us to start paying back those bonds?
Most likely, this is hard to predict, of course, most likely the fiscal policies, basically the tax rules we have now, would stay if Trump was reelected. Because even if the Senate were to go to the Democrats, he can just veto any changes if they want to increase tax on the wealthy and all that. They wouldn't have the majority they need to override his veto. A lot of people actually think, many economists, can make a good case for maybe a faster economic recovery if Biden were to win and the Senate were to go Democrat, because you'd have Democrats in the House, the Senate, and in the executive branch, where you could pass all kinds of stuff. And then we'd see probably a pretty rapid increase in debt as well, because they would probably pass, you know, we've seen what Congress wants to do. They want to spend another $2 to $3 trillion on additional stimulus, much of which is paying states who are struggling economically. So they could pass that just no problem, no resistance. Right now, Trump has decided he doesn't want to pass a bill that has big, quote unquote, bailouts, relief for states who have maybe stayed shut down. So, you know, a lot of people think that in the short term, it would be actually faster recovery, more stimulus, better for the short-term economy if you get a full Democrat across the board, which I can't argue with that. And that could also include additional debt and spending around the green energy stimulus they want to do. A local company you may have heard of, Array Technologies, went public this week and raised, I believe it was over $1 billion, because right now their stock went up 65% at issuance because a lot of people assume Biden's going to win, and there's a big push for green energy as part of his platform. So these solar companies right now are through the roof. That's not a recommendation to buy that stock or anything like that. It's just an interesting, it's where the market, you can tell, is already trying to predict the outcomes. And so you put all that together, and maybe, yeah, you have big changes, but maybe in the short term you get this big bump. The question is, long term, are you setting up the economy for ongoing real growth, or is it all just debt-fueled expansion?
So you're not really talking about, my question was, can we, if the incumbent stays in office, pay back the debt? We're going to have to structure that.
Yeah, let's get to that. So not until the economy recovers. There's just not going to be enough tax revenue when so many industries and companies are struggling. Right now, your technology, your online retailers, they're doing great, but oil and gas is still going to languish probably for another year or so. So many American incomes are down. Even the wealthier people a lot of times have significantly decreased incomes right now. And then you've got 8%, 9% unemployment, higher than that in many states. It's just not likely that we can get the tax revenues under that environment to relieve the debt we have now. And that's going to be the hard decision for whoever is elected, is when do you switch from trying to incentivize the economy with lower taxes and debt-fueled spending? When do you transition from that mode to moving more toward focusing on balancing our balance sheet a little bit here and getting some of that debt paid? Because that's a tough thing. I mean, when was the last time you saw a campaign where someone ran on raising taxes significantly across the board to pay back things that we bought, you know, over the last 20, 30 years? I mean, it's just not a common campaign pitch.
Brian, I received a couple of emails in the past week from people asking me about foreign markets. We don't really ever talk about those. We're kind of talking about the S&P and the Dow and NASDAQ and those kind of things, which are American-based markets. Now, I don't think all the companies are American companies in those, but there are foreign stock markets. So if you're a person that says, let's get all the manufacturing back to the United States from China, you might actually be affecting stock markets where people, Americans, have investments.
Exactly. And it's such an interconnected world now. You think of the big companies in the U.S., the big names, they all sell goods overseas, right? So what's bad for Europe or Asia, you know, it's going to eventually hurt us too, and vice versa. You know, they don't do well. We're the biggest consumers in the world still. We like buying stuff here in America. And so those other countries are highly dependent on how we're doing economically. The biggest challenge overseas right now, aside from COVID and Europe's really struggling right now with the second wave and additional shutdowns, they have not recovered economically nearly as fast as we have, is demographics as well. We're one of the only countries in the world that has a positive demographic profile. What I mean by that is we're expecting to see our population grow over time. And if you look at GDP, gross domestic product, the measure of economic expansion, it's a factor of population growth and productivity growth. Very hard to move your economy forward when your population's declining. And developed countries in Europe are facing that. China's facing that. Japan is definitely facing that. They sell more adult diapers than kid diapers in Japan. So these countries, no matter what they do with fiscal or monetary stimulus, and they've been trying to do both for a while now, they've got a headwind built into their very, you know, demographics that will make it tough.
I don't know, those adult diapers make me nervous, Brian. We're going to be back more with Brian Cochran, John Moore Associates, after these messages. Stay with us.
The COVID-19 global pandemic has disrupted everyday life in some way for nearly everyone on the planet. Yet Samaritan's Purse continues to share the eternal hope of the gospel and to serve in Jesus' name. We are trusting God as we make plans to collect Operation Christmas Child shoeboxes, just as we always have, during National Collection Week in November. Another great option to share God's love is to build a shoebox online. It's a convenient and personal way to give shoebox gifts directly from home. Build one by choosing from an exciting list of gifts, then adding a letter and a photo. We'll pack it for you and send it off. We want boys and girls around the world to know that God loves them and He has not forgotten them during this time of fear and uncertainty. Every gift-filled shoebox is a tangible expression of God's love. Get the latest updates and build a shoebox online at SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. That's SamaritansPurse.org/OCC.
The most important information anyone can receive comes from an understanding of the Bible. Only here do we find direct revelation about all things, about life and relationship with God. Life doesn't always provide us with time or opportunity to break away and study the Bible full time. That's why KNKT is dedicated to presenting round-the-clock teaching by some of the best communicators we can find about Scripture and how it relates to our lives. We need to be exposed to the full counsel of God's Word. And now, KNKT presents a Bible School of the Air. Each Saturday, starting at 9 a.m., KNKT will present Through the Bible, verse-by-verse teachings by Chuck Smith and Chuck Missler. Skip Heitzig, followed by a question-and-answer session with Scott Richards. We'll be rotating through the Old and New Testament, so drop into our Bible journey at any time and go through the entire Word of God with us. The KNKT Bible School of the Air. Tuition is free. The rewards are eternal. Take your seat Saturdays at 9 a.m. on 107.1 FM.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
I want to start this segment by first encouraging everybody. If you're registered to vote, voting, early voting starts tomorrow, the 17th. Please go to the polling places. Please vote. There are various people we've talked to. The one that comes to mind immediately is our former Congressman Steve Pierce, chairman of the Republican Party. He has come in here and said, look, half of the faith community is registered to vote. And the bad part is only half of them will actually vote. We got to totally change that around. We need the entire faith community to come out in mass, vote your values, vote your Bible, and let's get some people in office that really care about our economy, that are willing to work together. And Brian, you work in your office with people of different ethnicities, different political persuasions, and you all work together for the common. We got to get that done on the political side, don't we?
Yep. And I think what helps us is we work with people of all belief systems, but we run our practice on timeless, transcendent principles that happen to be biblical, and they work. And that's the way we explain it to our non-believer clients is just even if you're not a Christian, you can benefit from these principles that have been proven over thousands of years to be right. And people that come in, even if they're not believers, if their finances are in good shape, guess what principles they're actually exhibiting, whether they knew it or not, they are biblical principles. And it's really encouraging when you see people buy into that, even if they're not necessarily aligned with our faith.
We've talked a lot about if the incumbent administration stays in office, what will happen and kind of projecting forward. Of course, we can't tell the future. The Lord knows the future. We don't. But let's say that Joe Biden and the Democrats have some success in the election. Brian, I want to first talk to you about income earners that are pretty high wage or high income earners, like over 400,000. Then I want to ask you about parents and caregivers and how they'll be affected by the new tax changes.
Yeah, so it's pretty clear that they've determined that 400,000 is the level that makes you a high income earner. And I think it's worth mentioning in Arizona, they actually have a proposal right now, a proposition for an additional tax on high income earners. And they also put 400,000. So for some reason, that's the number. So that's what we're talking about. We say high income earners. There's a whole nother level of increase in taxes if you're over $1 million of income. And I want to touch on that at one point here, just because I think there's some interesting considerations there. So these are folks who already pay the vast majority of the tax burden. We talked about 47% of people don't pay anything because they have low income. But this top, you know, couple percent really pay a high percentage of our federal tax burden.
And that's happening right now before these tax changes.
Even before the increases. So one of the things to look at is, okay, who wins though? Where does that money go? There's not a proposal for another drop in the income tax rate for middle class families, but what you do see is some pretty generous tax credits. So to clarify, a lot of people get confused on what a deduction is and what a credit is. A deduction lowers the income that you report on your tax return, whereas a credit is actually a credit against tax. It's worth a dollar. So a deduction for a middle income family might only be worth 12 cents, but a credit's worth a dollar. So credits are a big deal, especially what's called refundable credits. A refundable credit is a credit that's let's say I only had $1,000 of tax liability, but if I have a $2,000 credit, the first $1,000 can knock out my tax liability, and the second $1,000 that I receive in credit could be refunded to me, and I actually end up making money on my taxes. So not only do I not pay taxes, I actually profit from filing my taxes, which I think is a very interesting concept. You could have a lot of debate about if that's the best way to redistribute wealth. So the tax credits, the proposal right now that Biden's put out, which could be very different by the time it gets into law, is if you have a child under 17, it goes from $2,000 is the current child tax credit up to $3,600. So pretty substantial increase, really. That's a big benefit.
And these
for
are
families.
For dependent children.
For dependent children under 17. There's also a dependent care credit that's going from $3,000 to $8,000 for one child. And then from $6,000 to $16,000 if you have multiple children. And then the one I thought was really interesting is the caregiver credit, which does not exist now. So if you're a full-time caregiver, think of a family member, an aging family member, $5,000 if you're providing informal long-term care. The other one that's being brought back that was actually in place a few years ago, I had forgotten about this one. You might remember it more as a lender. A $15,000, a credit up to $15,000 for first-time home buyers, which I thought was interesting in light of the fact that the real estate market right now is absolutely on fire and has been one of the shining lights of the economy throughout COVID. So you add all these up. I mean, if you're a first-time home buyer couple with three kids and grandma's, you know, living with you and you're taking care of her, boy, you start adding those up. That's a lot of credits.
Now, is this a credit in addition to an interest deduction?
Correct.
You would take?
So you could still have a mortgage interest deduction or other deductions. Most low-income people nowadays take a standard deduction where they don't actually itemize those types of deductible costs. But so there's definitely some benefits there. Now, keep in mind, again, looking at higher income earners, these types of credits always phase out at a certain income level. So if you earn over some certain limit, we don't know what his exact limits will be for those phase outs. You don't get a child tax credit. You don't get, you know, all these other credits that come through. So these are specifically designed for low to middle class, maybe what you might consider upper middle class families in Albuquerque even could qualify for some of these. And it's money directly back in the pockets of those families.
I think we look at this pool of money. We look at the money that we pay in taxes, the money we save in taxes. Somewhere there is a bucket full of all this money. What bothers me is we don't get any say on how that's spent.
Yeah, and that's another reason why we vote, though, is I think a lot of people worry about the tax side. What am I going to pay? But to your point, how are you going to allocate those resources is really important, because that's what could drive more debt, which is, ends up being future taxes you have to pay. There's a lot of factors there that people don't always think about. And one of the big misconceptions, I struggle with this a lot when people talk about, well, the government pays for it. Wait. Where does the government get all of their money? The government does not create wealth. It can only take wealth and reallocate it. So when people talk about, well, it's free money from the government, no, someone at some point will take money from their checking account, pay taxes to cover whatever you're seeing, whatever that federal road program is or these tax credits. This is money coming from another person. And I think when you remember that, they can only redistribute wealth they can't create. That's a big differentiator in how people look at taxes and spending.
We are with Brian Cochran. He's a certified financial planner with John Moore Associates. In our last segment today, after this break, we're going to talk about how businesses, particularly small businesses, are going to be affected by the potential of a new president and what'll happen. And we can only project, but we're going to talk about that. If you are a small business owner, stay with us. We'll be right back on ABQ Connect.
Hi, this is Adam Holtz, and you're listening to Plugged In.
Have you ever thought about what you want to do with your life?
I like living in this moment here with you.
In the new movie Two Hearts, now in theaters, Chris Gregory is a 19-year-old with a flair for practical jokes. Jorge Bolivar also strives to make every day count, but for a different reason. A heart condition means any day could be his last. This movie is one of those stories that telegraphs exactly where it's going. Everyone in the audience knows that a tragic but bittersweet plot point is coming. Two Hearts celebrates the importance of family and sacrifice. Spiritual themes hint at the possibility of an afterlife. Suggestive material, some profanity, and graphic hospital images are the main content concerns here. So we're giving Two Hearts a 3 out of 5 for family friendliness. Read the full review at PluggedIn.com/radio. I'm Adam Holtz for Focus on the Family's Plugged In Movie Review.
I'm Rob Sneed, General Manager at Power Forward. If you're tired of the other guys' old-school, hokey games and cheesy sales tactics, then come experience something new-school at Power Forward. Our approach is simple. We make it all about you. Every new vehicle comes with the confidence of a 100,000-mile warranty, complimentary maintenance, and roadside assistance. And we also guarantee that we'll beat any new Ford deal in New Mexico or put $1,000 cash in your pocket. Find your ride at mypowerford.com.
Call 888-243-8183 for details.
Tired of being quarantined? Have the pandemic blues got you down? Having a food choice crisis? Let's talk about a solution. In queso emergency, head straight for Casa Taco, winner of Albuquerque the Magazine Best of the City 3 years running. Come try the signature brisket and green chili tacos, carne asada tacos, and the amazing puffy tacos, plus much more. Convenient online ordering at casa-taco.com. 2 locations in Albuquerque and 1 in Elephant Butte. Casa Taco.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome back to ABQ Connect. I want to mention, everybody, if you're looking to buy a home or refinance, be sure and get a quote from Indigo Mortgage. Ben Lucero and his team at Indigo Mortgage support the programming on KNKT and ABQ Connect. Indigo Mortgage, because nobody cares more about your mortgage loan. Give them a call at 836-5700. That's Indigo Mortgage at 836-5700. Brian Cochran, John Moore Associates in studio. And Brian, we're going to come now to what I think is maybe the most important part of our discussion. And that's how, if we have a new president, how small business and big business will be affected with the proposed taxes.
Yeah. So, there were some pretty generous tax cuts offered to businesses large and small as part of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. That's the Trump tax reform. And the idea there was they were going to provide businesses with more financial flexibility to reinvest, to expand, and to spend to grow the economy. And that was hotly debated whether that would happen or not. What we actually saw happen is as soon as that hit, we saw many of the big corporations increase their baseline wages. We saw bonuses issued. We saw increased charitable giving, in many cases increased spending on both mergers and acquisitions to grow their business by buying other companies, as well as infrastructure expenses. So it seemed to move things, and we did see wage increases certainly accelerate after, you know, 2016, that we saw a significant uptick in the growth of wages for high income and middle and low income people. So it seemed to work, but that's a big part that, again, the two administrations would look at differently. So, you know, the Biden campaign has been very clear. They would get rid of some of those tax cuts. So they would restore the higher tax rate for corporations. So what we often call C corps. And C corps, if you think of the big publicly traded companies, they're C corps. If you're going to have more than 100 shareholders, usually that's it. You're a big C corp. And they pay taxes very differently than what's called an S corp, which is very common for small businesses. Our firm is an S corp. Many of our small business clients are in LLCs and S corps. And so C corps would get a pretty big bump back to the old tax rate. Now, keep in mind, the reason we cut taxes is we actually had one of the highest corporate tax rates in the world at the time of the cut. Now, we offer lots of deductions to help offset some of that high tax rate, but we were trying to be more competitive. So that would go back up. And then also the—
Is that because businesses were moving offshore?
It incentivized people to keep revenues offshore and not report revenues back to the U.S. That was one of the things. For sure. And then the S-Corp side, S-Corps basically pass money through. So if I have profits in my business as an S-Corp and I distribute those profits, they're taxed at my personal tax rate. They pass out of the corporation through to me and I pay them. And actually, my business was exempted from this specific type of credit, but there's what's called qualified business income tax deduction was given for those S-Corps where they were passing income through. And so people who had small businesses were paying less tax. The small business owners I talked to, some of them enjoyed that and took it as personal income. Many, many of them used that extra money to pour back into the business, and they felt like they had more capacity to invest in their businesses. And kind of my question to people is, do you think you can increase taxes by 10% on companies and not see a negative impact on employment? I mean, just I'd leave that question out there for the listener. If so, how does that make sense? You know, where does that money come from? Because businesses only get their money from their customers. So if they're going to have higher tax liabilities and they want to keep the same amount of, you know, net profits, there's only one place they get that money. They either have to cut expenses or they have to get more money from the customer.
Brian, I was reading the U.S. Census Bureau statistics before the show today about small business applications in the United States up to 38% mm-hmm. from where they were, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. That means there's a whole bunch of people that have opened up small businesses and they could be drastically affected by these higher taxes.
Yeah, especially if they're in that higher bracket. Again, you're really seeing those things affected if you're the higher income earner. Speaking of higher income earners and small businesses, so one of the rules in here I think that's really interesting in the Biden proposal is to have a substantial tax increase, especially on capital gains for people over $1 million of income. And you think, oh, someone over $1 million of income in 1 year, tax them all you want. That's plenty of money, right? But every time I've seen high capital gains for someone with over $1 million, it's almost always a business sale. So I want to walk you through a story of how this actually plays out. So we have a fabulous client couple we work with that owned a hotel in Colorado. The husband and wife, he started off, got his degree, left the original field he was in, and then started working in a hotel because he wanted to be around that resort lifestyle mm-hmm. in Colorado. Worked his way up from working in the hotel to managing and eventually bought the hotel. I mean, totally built his way up into it.
American dream.
He and his wife ran that hotel. They poured everything they had in that hotel for a year. So they didn't pay much income tax along the way because everything went back into the business. And you think how many thousands of families enjoyed that hotel, how many hundreds of employees they had over the years, millions of dollars of payroll all along the way, paying their property taxes, all this. Then he sold his business in 2007, right before the market tipped over. I mean, just nailed the timing just by coincidence. It was his time to leave and received several $1 million for that property that he'd been pouring himself into. If he had done that, let's say in California with their tax rate, and if he had done that with the tax rates that are proposed for capital gains, which is if you have the sale of a business or an asset that's appreciated, that's capital gains tax. Right now, he would be paying 24% tax plus New Mexico tax, so a little less than 30% tax to sell that asset. Under the proposed taxes from the Biden campaign, that number would go up to 40% plus a surcharge, so he'd probably be closer to 50% tax on that same transaction. If he was in California, that number would get close to 55 plus. So the challenge for me on that is a lot of times people think of capital gains, that's investments, that's wealthy people. This is this person's life work. And the challenge I have, and I think the philosophical discussion here for us to consider is, yeah, we'd love to repurpose his wealth into other things and redistribute it amongst families who need it. And he's a millionaire. That's his life's work. Are we entitled to half of that on the way out? That's the philosophical debate we have.
The host gets to say no, Brian.
and I struggle with that because I see these business owners and I've heard their stories and I've seen them build this wealth. And I've seen a lot of other people benefit along the way as they've built that wealth. The people who enjoy the benefits, the services and products that they provide in their business, the employees. A lot of times these people are very generous with their employees along the way. And then they finally have their what we call a liquidity event where they sell that business and turn it into liquid assets. And to see half of it go away is hard to stomach when you know what they've been through along the way.
Well, and Brian, I don't know the gentleman that you're talking about or the family you're talking about, but I have plenty of friends of mine that have done similar type things, especially in real estate, and they've earned minimal income annually for many years as a sacrifice to build up the asset. And here's the most important thing. They've done so to take care of the people that work for them.
Yep.
They've paid other people and made sacrifices themselves. And again, I'm just going to say it because I get to – They said I could.
Yep.
I'm going to say that it bothers me that we're going to stick our hands in the pockets of these people and try to take more of what they've sacrificed to build up, because at some point they're entitled to, you know, have a gain.
Yep. And, you know, again, philosophically, you could feel different. Someone out there could be going, no, take 60, you know, there's some people in national Congress right now that would say take 80%, 70% of that person's wealth. That's fine because they're wealthy and they can afford it. What I would keep people in mind is, let's say we had a global tax system like that. If you had a global tax system and your family had an income of over 75,000, you're in the 1%, baby. Let's take 75% of your income. You know, it's all relative, and the wealthy person is always the person just has a little bit more than you. Mm. And so that's the debate that happens on this is, yes, wealthy people should pay more than low income people. No one debates that fact. It's how far do you take that? And we already have one of the healthiest proportions of tax paid between low-income and high-income people.
John Moore Associates' website is johnmoore.com. You have some resources people can follow up on listening to this show on your website. What kinds of things can they learn by going to your insights page?
Well, our last blog post was on whether or not you should make investment decisions around your politics. And we just had a webinar that we hosted on Wednesday that's going through our compliance approval process. And we should have that up on the website early next week, where we had about a 40-minute contribution from a guest speaker who came in and talked about the history of markets and politics and how they're related. A lot of good information there. So we try to be timely with our information so that whatever the topic of the day might be, you know, for example, if Biden were elected and these tax proposals look like they were going to happen, we would certainly be writing content on that and saying, okay, what does that mean for the average person? For the, you know, who's the winners, who's the losers in this? And then how does each of them respond? Those are all types of things that we would produce.
I'm fascinated with how the media covers various things. In fact, during the last break, you were telling me a little story about how you saw a statement from Kamala Harris, vice presidential candidate with Joe Biden, and some statements she made about Biden's not doing certain things. And then Nancy Pelosi's in the next news report talking about the opposite, and both things are Donald Trump's fault. Tell us that story.
Yeah, so, and this, I'm not trying to over-politicize this. I think it's just interesting how people look at debt and deficits. A lot of people are concerned about our debt level as a country. And that's what Harris was expressing in the article I was reading, is that she was going so far to say it's a national security concern that we have such high debt. And I think you can make a good case for that. I don't necessarily disagree that we need to keep an eye on that debt level and make sure it's at a level that doesn't compromise our safety, our dependence on other governments, and our ability to pay those liabilities in the future.
Brian, we are making payments on that debt.
Yeah, the interest and the recurring loans. So I don't necessarily disagree with that. Well, then the next article down in the thread I was reading was Nancy Pelosi was commenting on the debate that she's having with the president about how to get the next round of stimulus. And she was upset that he wouldn't meet her with higher stimulus package. You know, she's looking for $3.5 trillion of stimulus, and he's trying to get it down to one and a half, maybe two is what they might agree upon. So in the same day's news, you've got someone complaining about deficits, and the same party is complaining about not getting enough spending that would be increased debt and deficit spending. So, and that's, I feel like that's a good symptomatic piece of the national conversation right now. None of us want the debt, but we all want more spending. And we're in this tug of war right now in our priorities. And it's just an interesting tension that you feel fiscally. I mean, the reality is all this tax conversation we're having, somebody has to pay more at some point. We don't have enough tax revenue right now to pay everything we spend. And the more we drag on economic shutdowns and create more deficits and less income, the more those debts are going to pile up. And so we have to make decisions about how much economic growth do we want right now and how much is that a priority versus COVID concerns. Then we have to figure out what tax rates we're willing to tolerate as a society, who's going to pay that tax. And my fear is eventually up to this date, we've been very good about protecting the lower middle class people. Again, with almost half of all households are paying no tax. The middle class, I've got clients that make $80,000 a year and don't pay any tax. They're not doing anything magical. They just got a couple kids in the house. They get tax credits and that's it. And that's great. At some point, the ones who are going to hurt and pay on this is going to be the middle class and the lower class, because you cannot extract enough wealth from the upper class to pay everything. And that's what they've done in Europe. They've expanded their social programs, increased their debts, and the middle class in Europe pays much higher income tax rates than the rest of us do, on top of higher cost of living in many countries through the pass-through that happens to businesses. So that's the part. Right now, we've been able to shelter that, and we've been able to just pick on the wealthy or take on other debts. That's not the long-term track. If we expand expenses and if we don't keep the economy growing, eventually we're going to come down to the lower middle class for that revenue.
This all comes back to individuals that are listening to this program need to be saving money, need to be prudent about how much debt they currently have. In the short time we have left, Brian, encourage people, they should be really, really cutting back on, I guess you could say, needless spending and debt if possible.
Yeah, always looking at your personal balance sheet. You can't control every dollar spent by Congress. You can control a heck of a lot of your spending and keep your personal balance sheet maybe a little healthier than our federal balance sheet.
You can. And I just can't emphasize enough. I know so many people that are into the latest cars and the latest boats and this and that. I'm not criticizing folks that like that kind of stuff, but when it's making it hard to make your payments and that's a major stressor, just get out of those things. Get out of those things. Get some savings. Get your debt paid off. And it's not rocket science.
No, and it's what you can control.
Yeah. And that gets back to that biblical perspective. And wow, Brian, this was a lot. This was a lot. I want to let everybody know, it takes us a couple days, probably Monday. This show will be available on abqconnect.online, and you can listen to Brian. You can go to johnmoore.com and go to their insights tab and look at more information about investing. Hope everybody will vote. It's going to be an interesting thing. Brian, we'll see you next week for our 10-minute update.
See you then.
ABQ
Connect is presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling. For service, call 504-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling. Locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.